Hi, everybody. It's me again. It's Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime. And, oh my god. And, it's Crafting Story Time. I crochet and tell you a pretty awful story so we can craft and get traumatized together. If I'm following a pattern, I'll post that in the show notes. And really, you know, I'm just trying to get a little craft circle vibe going. You don't have to crochet. You can do needlepoint. You can knit. You may do whatever you want. I just like talking about true crime. I'm always at home. I work from home. Stay-at-home mom. I don't get out much. So I decided to do this. Now, the story I'm covering today is, it's a commonly covered story. I'm not gonna let that deter me though. I just remember when it happened. I'm the same age as the victim. You know, I was 15. I think she was 16. She graduated, I think, a year. She would have graduated a year before me. We're very close in age. When I see pictures of her, what she was wearing, and you look at like her friends. Our friend groups look very similar, and she definitely looks like someone I would have been friends with, and it just made me really sad. I remember when this happening, because all I could think about is how this could have very easily been someone in my friend group. Not that I had anybody, you know, alarming like that, but just that there are monsters everywhere, and it's unfortunate that it happened to anybody, let alone such a sweet girl like this. So our story starts off in Pocatello, Idaho. A family is returning from a weekend trip out of town. Their 13-year-old daughter runs inside, and inside is her cousin. Her cousin's been house-sitting for the weekend. And instead of seeing her cousin, she stumbles upon a very gruesome scene. Her cousin is actually on the floor dead and has been brutally murdered. She's been stabbed to death. Police come, detectives show up. This girl is identified as Cassie Jo's daughter. And, you know, let me just time out here. I've heard this name said two types of way. I've heard Stoddart and I've heard Stoddart. I'm going to go with Stoddart just because of the two D's. Stoddart makes more sense than Stoddart. I could be very wrong though. Language is weird. And I think we all know the English language breaks a lot of its own rules. But I'm going to go with Stoddart. I apologize if I'm wrong. Like I said, I've heard it two different ways. So I just want to clarify that really quick. But yes, our victim is 16-year-old Cassie Jo Stoddart. So Cassie Jo is a very bright girl. She's very sweet. She seems to be, you know, doesn't cause trouble at home, has a good circle of friends. She seems very well liked and, you know, almost like an ideal daughter, I would say. I don't doubt that, you know, she's had arguments with her parents or anything like that. I feel like that's typical teenage stuff. But she hasn't had any concerning behavior or any rebellious actions that point to things taking a darker turn. She's never done anything like that. In fact, the reason why she's house sitting is because she's trying to earn money to buy herself a car. And, you know, I got my car when I was 15. Because my parents kept forgetting to pick me up at school. So I got a car and, you know, oh my god. Like when I was actually allowed to drive it, I was thrilled. I started getting in a lot of trouble because I was a little too thrilled. But, I mean, it was great that you get this new sense of independence and this new sense of freedom. Yeah, your parents have you drive around to go get them stuff. But, I mean, what's the worst place that you can be when you're a teenager? It's being at home. Even if you're from a good home, for some reason, being at home is like the worst thing ever. So Cassie wants that freedom. So she's trying to earn money and she's being paid to house it. And she took it very seriously also. She wasn't like planning on throwing a house party. All she did is ask for permission is if her boyfriend Matt could come over. And I feel like that already just shows the character in Cassie. When I was 16 and my parents were out of town, everybody was coming over. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Dad. Well, they already knew because they would always find some symbol that I was getting high somewhere around the house. Somebody left seeds or somebody was ashing somewhere that they weren't supposed to every fucking time. I didn't have great friends. I had some good friends, but some of them just didn't give a shit. And yeah, so Cassie was definitely better than me. That's for sure. So, you know, she asks, she gets permission for Matt to be over. And Matt's mom is also aware that Cassie's house sitting. So they're going to be home alone for a few hours. So both of these kids are respectful of their parents and understand the boundaries and seem to respect the boundaries, which, again, not everybody's that lucky. So whether she was raised right or she's just a good kid, I want to say it's both. So she's a really sweet girl. And again, great grades, great circle of friends. She seemed to be thriving in life and she would have gone very far, I think. I think she was already taking the footsteps to be a very productive person in society and probably would have done great things. Now, with being alone in this house, and this is the other thing that like really stuck with me about this, is so where this house was kind of like on the outskirts of town. It was in a rural area. The nearest neighbor is half a mile away. So there's some distance there and that's far. So, and I grew up kind of like that. Now my nearest neighbor was right next door, but I was related to everybody on the ranch. Anybody who I wasn't related to was, you know, pretty kind of far down the street. And I would always worry, like, if anything went wrong, how long would the ambulance take to get there? Or if there was a fire, how long does the fire department take? And is it the city fire department? Is it the volunteer fire department? Does the volunteer fire department have as much as the city fire department? I was a very anxious kid. So her being alone in this big house in the middle of nowhere was already nerve-wracking for her. And she wants to do a good job. She wants to report back that nothing went wrong. She took care of everything. She took care of the family dog. She wants, you know, she knows if this doesn't go well, they're not going to ask her again. And that's the last time they're ever going to pay her to do something. So she's taking it seriously. So, you know, her mom drops her off. Matt comes over. Matt and her are hanging out. They're just watching TV. And the doorbell rings. And she's kind of like, well, who's here? Because she most definitely did not invite anybody else over. And it turns out it's two of Matt's friends, Brian Draper and Tori Adamchik. I said that wrong. Tori Adamchik. Brian Draper, Tori Adamchik show up. And Cassie's kind of pissed because never did she say to Matt, like, yeah, let's have friends over. Nor did Matt ask, like, is it cool if they come by? I know I'd be pissed. But I mean, it's kind of hard also because when you're that age, if Matt's like her first, like, really serious boyfriend or one that she really, really likes and she's getting to hang out like with like this, you don't want to rock that boat. You don't want to be considered like a prude or, oh, she's a fucking bitch. She didn't let my friend stay over. We know how, I mean, boys would be like that. Girls are like that as teenagers. Everybody's an asshole as a teenager. And I'm sure that's what went through her mind. Like, oh, I don't want them to think that I'm like not cool or I'm not a cool girlfriend or, you know, she probably had something like that going through her head. So she's like, no, they can stay. And so Brian and Adam hang out with Matt and Tori for a little bit. And they watch a movie, and Brian and Tori are kind of disappointed Because for whatever reason, they're under the impression that there was going to be a house party. And Cassie's like, yeah, most definitely not. There is not going to be a party here tonight. You heard wrong, or you've been misinformed. And they're just like, well, you know, what the fuck? Or something stupid like that. They basically are like, I don't want to just watch a movie here. I could just go to the movies and we can have a better time. Meh. So, I mean, and the thing about Brian and Tori is they considered themselves like film critics and movie buffs. I really wouldn't be surprised if they used the term film snob or cinephile. That one's my favorite with people who are like, oh, I'm really into movies. I'm a cinephile. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I love movies too. I'm not that pretentious though. yes, yeah, cinephile. I have no doubt that they've used one of those terms. And they also like love all things horror. They're always recording themselves just like on the daily. They're basically vlogging their whole life because they're so interesting. I say that and I'm doing this shit. Oh no, I'm a hypocrite. But there's a difference between us. I'm actually doing something and I'm telling you a story, so there's a difference. I'm not just talking to talk about myself, that's for sure. So that's them in a nutshell. Not the most remarkable of kids. And even at that, like, I think they're kind of dorky. They're a little odd, so they're kind of outcast. They're not popular. And you know, for someone who knew a lot of outcasts and everything, I feel like sometimes you outcast yourself because you, I don't know. Like, what's annoying is there's really that whole thing with like jocks and punks and all that. And you have some of us who are into punk and everything but could talk with the jocks because who gives a shit? And then you have the ones who are like, I need to be in this box. So fuck that guy. And nah, he's, you know, oh my God, what's that word? It's like patriarchy, but you know, the man. That whole thing. And I don't know. I feel like they're kind of more in that group. They weren't really outcasts in as much as they outcasted themselves because they probably thought they were better than everybody. They probably thought they were smarter than everybody, and everybody else was a waste of their time. That's the vibe I'm getting from both of these boys. So, anyway, that's my little tangent on those little shits. So they take off, they go to the movies. Matt and Cassie stay. You know, I'm sure they're happy to be alone, or I'm sure Cassie is, because, you know, nothing went wrong. The boys are out of the house, and everything's back to what she told her aunt how it's gonna be. But then the lights go out, like the power goes out. And as someone who grew up in the middle of nowhere, I don't care that my family lived next door. When the power was out, I was shitting bricks. It's dark. There's like, when you live that far out, there's not really any street lights. And if you're not right off the road, even if there is street lights, they don't hit your house. Not enough. It's terrifying out there. Like, sometimes we think about moving back to the country. Like, as it is, I was thinking about moving back to the country last week, and I took my stepson home and I ran over a snake. I was like, nope, I'm not coming back out here. Yeah, I ran over a fucking snake. So, It's like, yeah, no, it's terrifying out there. I would have been scared too. Luckily, you know, when this happens, she's not alone. Her and Matt, you know, they get flashlights. They kind of, you know, try to make sure everything's okay, check the house. And luckily, most of the power comes back on. So they're spooked, but they're, you know, it's better than being in the dark. So they go back to watching TV. I'm sure they're still a little sketchy on their toes. And then there's honking outside. Matt's mom is there to pick him up. But Cassie doesn't want to be alone after that. She does not want to spend the night alone there. I mean, that's her first night staying there by herself too. It's even worse. So she's scared. And she's telling Matt, like, she's asking if he can stay. So Matt goes and asks his mom for permission. And, like, of course, Matt's mom is just like, no. We're not playing that game. You two unsupervised, sleeping together at night? Nope. Which, yeah, girl, don't blame you. I would have done the same thing. Like, no. But she understands the situation as well. So she offers for Cassie to stay the night at her house with Matt. There's supervision and she won't feel unsafe. But Cassie, she really wants to do a good job and she doesn't feel right telling her aunt that she's gonna house sit and not stay the night like she said she would. So she declines the offer and Matt goes home with his mom. He calls her. When he gets home, they talk a little bit and then they hang up and they go to bed. And that's the last time anybody has talked to Cassie Joe. So when police hear that Matt is going to be at, when, you know, they tell the police that Matt was going to be at her house, naturally, that's who they go talk to. They go talk to Matt. And of course, Matt has an alibi. His mother picked him up. She picks him up. He tells them everything about the lights going out, that he tried to get her to stay at his house, that she declined. And he mentions that Brian and Tori stopped by also. And, they are like, well, okay. So next up is Brian and Tori. So Brian and Tori get called in. They have movie tickets for. They have movie tickets. They went to go see Holes. Like, ugh. And see, even like just that part resonates with me. Because I think there was at least 2 or 3 years in a row where that was a required reading. And then the movie came out, which I don't even think I ever finished the movie just because I had to read the book so much. And Holes was far less interesting to me than Harry Potter. So, yeah, I didn't finish the movie, but that's what they went to go see. They went to go see Holes. And, well, police are just like, well, damn, they have an alibi too. So they're looking things over and they do see some things like Cassie's cousin tells them that she was already caught off guard when she went inside because the front door was unlocked. Detectives notice that it's not a break-in. Nothing's missing. And it's not like the house is ransacked, like they were looking for something specific. There's nothing like that. There's no indication that this was like targeted towards the house. It seems like it was very personal to Cassie because Cassie was stabbed over 30 times and there's at least 9 fatal wounds. So whoever did this definitely wanted her dead. And oh my God, to stab somebody that many times, it's very personal. Most people don't want to see that kind. Nope, most people don't want to be that up close and personal to death unless they really hate that person or they really like it. So that's what these detectives are up against. And then, so they're like, they really have no other leads as to who this could be. She has no enemies. She's not in like a gang. She doesn't have any beefs at school with anybody. So they basically backtrack and they go back to the people most definitely that they know were there. And they question them again, but they also do like more detailed questioning to see maybe somebody noticed something or maybe somebody slipped up and I don't know. As it is, they couldn't get over the fact that when they told Matt that Cassie was dead, they said he was completely emotionless. And honestly, I get the concern, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure this poor boy was just in shock. I'm pretty sure, I mean, When my high school sweetheart died, we hadn't been together in like years, but I had just talked to him the week before. And when I found out that he was murdered, I was in shock for that whole day. Because that was literally all I could think of. But I just talked to him. And I feel like that's how it was for Matt. He had just talked to her. He talked to her on the phone that night. He had just talked to her. He told them that he hung out with Tori at Tori's house that weekend, and he kept calling her, but she didn't answer. But I have no doubt that this boy was in shock. I definitely don't think it was that he didn't care. I think it was a very hard thing to face at 16. And for all we know, maybe Cassie was like his first big love, that teenager big love. And she died. She died right after he left her. So they have Matt take a polygraph test, and he's clean. He passes with flying colors. Matt had nothing to do with this. And again, he has the alibi. And I don't think Matt was wealthy enough to put a hit on her. So once they rule Matt out, for sure this time, they go back to the two boys. And the boys, again, they have their alibi that they were at the movies. So they start, digging a little deeper into that aspect. They ask them, well, what was the movie about? And suddenly, the two movie buffs can't give them a plot. They can't name one actor in that movie. Like, dude, I didn't even watch the whole thing of that movie, and I can tell you, Shia LaBeouf is in there, but I remembered him for different reasons. And Ripley, Mr. Horror Buffs, Ripley is in there. What are you talking about? Sigourney Weaver. She's in there. I think it's Sigourney Weaver. Am I thinking the wrong redhead? Let me Google this really quick. I swear it's her. And I apologize to the redhead community if I'm wrong, but let's find out because I swear that's Sigourney Weaver. I'm almost positive. It's Sigourney Weaver. It's her. You're telling me, Mr. Film Buffs, that you can't remember Ripley is in this. Ripley. Alien's probably one of the greatest horror movies ever. It's fucking fantastic for being made when it was. It holds up. No CGI. Get out of here with that. No. Ugh. Film buff my ass. Do some research. Or, like, just. That's how you know they're teenagers. Teenagers don't know how to lie, and when they do, they're like sociopaths. These two are just dumb. Fucking scream nerds. Anyway. That just irritated me because I honestly didn't even realize that till just now, right now. Like, it's Sigourney Weaver, horror dudes. If you can't name Ripley, like, are you really into horror, bro? Like, no, it's terrible. Okay, but yeah. So they can't tell you the plot. They can't name anybody in this movie. Nothing. Which, I mean, even the police, like, know that they consider themselves movie buffs and everything. So even they're just like, well, that doesn't sound right. So then they go to the movie theater. And I'm assuming Pocatello is kind of a small town because the girl working the ticket booth, they ask her, hey, did you see these boys in here by any chance Friday night? And she's like, oh, that's Brian and Tori. I go to school with them. And no, they were not here. She tells them, no, they were not here that night because she would have remembered them. She was the one that was checking tickets and letting people into that movie. So police are like, well, that's interesting. So then they go back. And they're just like, all right, what the hell? Something's up here. So what they do is, they go ahead and bring Brian in again. And when they call Brian in this time, Brian, you can tell something is really eating at Brian. It's like what's eating Gilbert Grape, but what's eating Brian Draper? And you care less. Well, no, you care. You just don't really care about him already because you're like, you did something, didn't you? So Brian's there and he's sullen and sulking. From one thing I saw, it said that he had tears in his eyes. And I mean, praise the Lord. I'm pretty sure when an officer sees like they're at that breaking point, they're like, I got him. I'm gonna get what I need now. I'm gonna bring peace to this family. Even though it's horrible, I'm gonna get them answers. So, Brian tells them that him and Tori, when they left that night, they never actually left. That they stayed, they actually noticed that the back door to the basement was unlocked, which, I want a basement. Just because, I don't know, I feel like I'll feel more comfortable knowing that I have somewhere in case we have a tornado. We've never even had one. Like, I think we've had one. We've had some, but it's always on the outskirts. I live in the city. We've never had one in the city. But I'm always like, oh, I feel like I should have a basement anyway, just in case, because I'm super terrified of natural disasters. And then I hear stuff like this. And I'm like, never mind. Don't need one. So they're in the basement, and they're the ones who actually turn the power off. They're playing with the breaker. They turn off the breaker. They hear them fumbling and getting scared, and they turn it back on. They hear Matt leave, and they decide, like, all right, now's their time to get Cassie. He tells police that they have like their masks, and they really wanted to just be like reenact this whole Scream horror movie, that whole part with like Drew Barrymore and everything. I think it's the Drew Barrymore part. I don't remember. I don't really care for that movie. Scream's all right. I don't think it's worth the hype, to be honest. I do love Ghostface though. I think the mask is cool as shit, but I'll take Halloween. No, really, you know what? I'll take Friday the 13th. First one, gold. I love it. So I'm guessing things get out of hand and Tori stabs Cassie. So Brian tells them this whole story. He also takes them to the burial site where they hid all of their evidence. And I don't know if this is just Brian not thinking. It sounds again like a very teenage thing to do is not have foresight and not to think things completely through. This is why you shouldn't lie. It's so much easier to just remember the truth than the lie. Even though I know it's hard, but when you do something this fucked up, I feel like piling lie on top of lie, you're just gonna, I mean, really. And also, it's gonna make everybody like really hate you. So what they find is they find the weapons because I don't, for some reason, they couldn't just use one knife, they had to use multiple. But they also find a VHS cassette. Because remember, these boys record everything. Everything. So they bury that too. And police are like, well, looky, looky. What's in here? Oh, these boys recorded all of their conversations, not just about Cassie. I mean, there's before and after Cassie recordings. And there's also, I mean, so apparently Brian like really idolized the Columbine shooters. I can't remember their names. I think one's name is Eric. But, well, that's a red flag right there. I swear, if anybody's kids, any of your kids are idolizing or admiring any school shooter, you need to get them to a therapist. Okay? That's not a phase. It's not the same as liking Marilyn Manson. It's not. So that's a red flag. And Him and Tori are just talking about how they're gonna be better than Ted Bundy and the Hillside Stranglers, and they're gonna be like remembered for this. With and I mean, it's like they wanted to be famous for all the wrong reasons. They wanted to be the picture children of Notorious. It's, I don't even know. I don't know how you get to that point. And it's not just Brian saying this, it's Tori talking about this too. One is not less guilty than the other in what they say. If anything, I would say some of the things Tori says are more disturbing because at one point they're talking about how it has to be Cassie and they're sorry to Cassie's family. But it has to be her. She's been chosen, which, ew, dude, gross. And Tori, who isn't in the frame, but you can tell the difference because when Tori, a lot of the times you can tell Brian's recording, basically. So you're able to determine whose is whose voice. And it's very distinct in Tori's voice because they're saying this in the car. So it's camera is actually facing the road, and you can hear the voice coming from the driver's side, and you hear Tori. I'm horny just thinking about it. Like, Brian, I get you got like you're in all this shit, but I feel like, you know what? Not even that, because I just remembered this weirdo was like, oh, me too. What boys are having these conversations? I get dudes talk about chicks, but these guys are talking about fucking dead chicks. And then they're like, oh, we were outcasted. You outcasted yourself. You outcasted yourself, most definitely. What is wrong with these boys? So they're talking about this, and then apparently they've been trying to find the right moment to kill both Cassie and Matt for a while. So they even have recordings of that, of them talking about how they've failed multiple times. Apparently, every time that they've known they've been together, there's always been a parent around. So they said that, you know, it was this golden opportunity that Cassie was going to be house sitting and in this house alone. But, you know, they just waited for Matt to leave. I do feel like Cassie was also targeted by Brian because apparently Brian liked her and she turned him down. She wasn't interested in her. And it's not said, but I have no doubt that it kind of bothers him that she's with his friend. I most definitely think that's part of it because teenagers. Hormones. They even mention another girl. I want her name, say her name's like Kirsty or Kristen, something like that. They talk about how, well, she's gonna be home alone from like 6 to 7 or something like that. So they're talking about Cassie, and then they start talking about another girl who could be like a second potential victim. And which is why they were hoping that there would be a house party so they can get twos of twos, threes of threes. They wanted to do like this whole slaughter. Like, I guess they wanted to be Richard Speck. And I, you know what? I highly doubt these boys even know who Richard Speck is. If they couldn't even tell who Ripley is. So they're talking about this whole thing and just incriminating, 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 incriminating. Which, again, thank God for stupidity. Really, thank you for being that stupid and that arrogant. That's the main thing. It's the arrogance of a lot of these like murders. Everybody thinks they're too smart to be caught. And I feel like that's how people end up in cults too. Like thinking you're too smart to be in one, and then because of that, you end up in one. It's the same thing here. They think they're so much smarter than everybody, they're so much better than everybody. You got caught right away, thank God, because you're a fucking idiot. Thank God you're stupid. Anywho. I really don't like murderers. I love true crime, but I really hate the arrogance and I love to talk shit about them. I just like talking shit, I'll be honest. I'm a girl, I'm gossipy, chismosa and all that. Well, you know what? I'm less chismosa now that I'm older. But I can gossip about them because they did wrong. Who cares? And I got even more chisme for you at the end of this. So, and you're gonna be with me on all of this. You're gonna be like, yeah, fuck that person too. Okay, so Brian and Tori are arrested, and they both are found guilty of first degree murder because it's clearly premeditated because of what's on the videos. Tori's parents So, like I said, there's recordings after they kill Cassie as well, and it's Brian saying, "I killed Cassie, I killed Cassie." He's all hyped up. Tori's there. You know Tori's there. You can hear him talking, but he's not saying anything like this. He's not saying anything like that. It's only Brian. So just that little sliver gives Tori's parents like this insane delusion that Tori's innocent, because him talking about getting hard for killing a girl isn't concerning. Okay. So they're found guilty. They're sentenced to life in prison. Of course, immediately they file appeals, which get denied, of course, because nobody's buying it. And the most annoying part of all of this is, again, Tori's parents are in such denial. And there's even like this interview with them where they talk to him, and he basically talks about how he had nothing to do with it. And the weirdest thing is, like, they're not even letting Tori talk. The parents are answering for him. And you just seeing that, you're like, oh, you babied Tori a lot, didn't you? You babied him a lot. You didn't correct behavior that should have concerned you. And you probably made him think, gave him some idea that no, it's not you, it's them. And really, no, it's your son, and you did nothing to stop it. His delusional mother goes and writes a book about it, which is disgusting because, and if you bought that book because you really believe her, you're disgusting too. Because what is wrong with you? She writes a book about it and everything, and her baby boy and how he's innocent, and Brian Draper's the devil or whatever. I don't know what that bitch put in there, but I mean, the delusion is strong in that woman. And I get it. I get it's a hard pill to swallow. I hope I'm never there. I really do. But at the same time, your son is on camera saying these atrocious things, these very disturbing fantasies. He is admitting to it. And he just, this is what like fascinates me so much about the world sometimes, is you have sickness and sickness, and somehow they ended up in the same room together. I don't, it just, it blows my mind every time. I get when they meet in prison because clearly they're not there for good reasons. But teenagers who both have this sickness, like not even the sickness, just who are just deranged and disturbed, find each other. How? How does that happen? It blows my mind. And his parents and the selfishness of it. Give it a rest, lady. I get that the victim, every time there's a murder like this, the victims are not only the victim's family, because the families are victims too. But when you're doing things like this, I don't feel bad for you as much, because all you're telling us is how your son became this way. That's how I feel. I could be wrong, and I'm sure people disagree with me, but I feel like that's how you get there. I really do. I feel like that's how you end up with this, by not holding your kids accountable and not wanting to see what's there. And you're over here writing books, and Cassie's parents are just trying to heal. Cassie's sister found out at work. I can't remember if it was her father or her uncle. I want to say it was her uncle. Came into her job and had to tell her that her little sister's been murdered, that she's been stabbed to death. How awful. And then you find out it was her fucking friends. It was her friends. Not friends who were jealous of her, or not because of Slender Man. No, because these boys were just assholes. And for some reason, wanted to be seen and went the wrong way about it. That's all it was. These boys wanted to be seen. And you were. And for someone complaining about how you're being seen, you really just solidified it. Now you're always going to be an outcast. You're a fucking murderer, Tori. You are. And you took your mom down with you. You took your family down with you because your family didn't know how to handle it. I understand that people do weird things in grief. But you also need to hold them responsible. I've made it very clear to my kids, or to my oldest. I'll tell my younger ones. I love you so much that I love you enough to face consequence. If you ever do something like this, I will not cover for you. I will not lie for you. I will not hide a dead body for you. I will not sacrifice myself and take away myself from your siblings because you did something you know better of. I won't. I love you enough to make you face consequence. And I think that's might be where Tori's parents went wrong. Cassie's parents are dealing with grief beyond compare. And her cousin was 13 when she found her. That's when things, you enter that whole rough stage of being a teen and school. Your body's changing. Your thoughts are changing. Your body chemistry, you're like, just everything chemically in your body is changing. And it's happening quickly. And then you see a cousin who you might have like idolized. You maybe loved spending time with her. She could have been her favorite cousin. And you find her dead. That's terrible. Her cousin suffered so much that she attempted suicide at some point. And that breaks my heart because her aunt blames herself for what happened to Cassie. And then her own daughter tries to take her life because she can't cope. The family can't cope. And they're trying to sell this house. Nobody wants to buy this house because of what happened in it. So they're trapped in the nightmare. They're trapped in it. And it's heartbreaking. It really is. I think that's why I'm so disgusted by Tori's mom. Because she doesn't have to deal with that. You have a bedroom to a murderer. To your son who turned into a monster. I get that. But that family is living in the nightmare. Do you just not sit in that living room anymore? Do you add on to the house and tear that side down? What do you do? I think it's very self-righteous to see the writing on the wands and have the evidence and willingly choose to ignore it and try to put it all on one person. Are you saying that your son was that impressionable that one boy could get him to say all these things? Because, I mean, they had been recording for quite a while before this happened. And this was a big plan. And they talk about this all the time. About how they want to kill someone and everything. It's not like it was one conversation and they acted on it. This was something they had been talking about nonstop. So, I mean, that's the story of Cassie Jo Stoddart and her dumbass murderers. She was such a beautiful girl. She really was. And it always makes me sad when life is taken, especially when they're so young. I can't do episodes of children, of like small children. And I know like there are some people who don't get how you can draw the line. But I mean, I really struggle. Oh, I fucked up on this. I really struggle with, I really struggle with children because they're defenseless. Just like I struggle with murders with the elderly. They're weaker. Cassie Jo, she was still a child. Let's not get that wrong. But she could fight. But they're still hard for me. And like I said, this one, wanted to do this one just because, again, I was her age when this happened. I had the same shirt as her. Where her murder took place is a lot like where I lived and a lot of me and my friends grew up. A lot of me and my friends were into movies. A lot of us were into horror. There's a lot of similarities in my adolescence like hers. And it just broke my heart. It freaked me out when I heard about it, and it's always stuck with me. And it just really made me realize just, it made me think about my friends a lot too, like my guy friends. And though I would always say, like, I don't think any of them would do that, I could have been wrong. Luckily, none of them are murderers till this day. Thank God. Please keep it up, guys. Let's not kill anybody. There's more to life than that. But I think a lot of it comes down to holding your kids accountable and being willing to see the writing on the wall when something's wrong. So I implore y'all, spend time with your kids and dig deep with them. I'll admit I struggle balancing the fact that I have, oh, my daughter's gonna be 13 soon, and then I have two really little ones. I have to balance them, but I make very sure that she's not forgotten. And anything that would even be concerning, I address it. Luckily, we're very honest with each other. I think it's because I was a single mom for so long that her and I, we have that bond. And no matter now that, you know, we're a family and everything, she's still my girl. That's my baby. She was it for me for so long. She'll always be it for me. Again, how do you end these things? How do you end these things? This is my little granny square. Like I said, I found somewhere that's selling Big Twist yarn. So, I mean, I just have a bunch of like different random colors from all these projects that I'm just really trying to get rid of and find uses for. I think with this emerald green, I'm gonna make myself like a bandeau top. Ooh, maybe I'll just make stripes because I do like these colors together. I'm digging it. But yeah, I'm just trying to make myself a pillow. I've never tried it. This is number 3 out of 9. I gotta make my friend a red flag. She thought it was cute. But yeah, if you're into this, you know, like, subscribe, share, tell your friends. I know it's a work in progress. I'm good with it. I'm just happy to be talking to y'all, to be honest. As it is, I gotta wrap this up anyway. I gotta go make dinner. But again, I'm Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime. And you know, thanks for joining me. I hope you got to craft away with me. And I'll catch you on the next one. Bye.